Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hi everyone, this is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing Jane Grieve. Jane is an Australian humour writer and ex-columnist for the Courier Mail, an Australian newspaper. Her most recent book is Slipping on the Lino, a collection of short family humour stories. Welcome, Jane.
Thank you very much, Jo. Happy to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. So maybe you can start by telling us a bit about you and your writing background, and maybe also the Stockman's Hall of Fame I want you to particularly mention, because we have a lot of American listeners, English listeners. So perhaps you could tell us a bit about you and your Australian writing background.
Oh, okay. Well, Jo, I've always loved communication, and I've always loved communication through writing, because when you write, you sort of can rub out things you said that were wrong and replace it, and that's what's really nice about writing. If you say the wrong thing, it's always a little bit hard to go back and redo it. But it's just something that I've always felt very strongly about, and I've got probably quite a strong family history of writing and reading and enjoying the written word. And I think that's probably a little bit of a start, but I think that has always led me into occupations and particular jobs and opportunities that required that skill. And I guess over more numbers of years than I care to mention, I've really honed that skill down so that I use a minimum of words to get the impression across that I want to get across. And I think that's part of, to me, that's the sort of writing I like to read, and it's the sort of writing that I like to do. So, I like writing real life. I like writing letters when I travel. I like writing emails. I like to write life as it is. I'm not a storyteller. I'm a raconteur more. Mm. I tell what's happened and put the funny spin to it.
Mm. Yeah. And maybe a bit about your background in Australia. I know you've been sort of working out in the bush and things.
Yeah, well, I was brought up on a farm, and so I have got a very strong connection to the land. And when I left school and started my wandering life, I actually did wander a lot overseas, but I always felt drawn very much to the Australian outback character and the Australian outback way of life. I mean, there are a lot of flies and dust and a lot of uncomfortable things, in actual fact, in the outback. But I think those personal discomforts have brought about a particular type of person, and humour is at the bottom of the way that those people cope with that particular lifestyle. And so, I mean, I've worked as a station cook on outback stations. I've worked as a stockman on outback stations where I had to shoe my own horses and where I got thrown off on my head and on a clay pan and all sorts of things, where we chased pigs with on our horses on our way out to muster the cattle and all that sort of thing, going out for a long, long way. And 250 square miles was the size of one of the properties that I worked on. And all of that, there's just the most amazing romantic allure to all of that, and I love it. And mm-hmm. So that actually drew me to meet a very famous Australian character called R.M. Williams, who is the epitome of the Australian outback. I think there would hardly be an Australian person who hadn't heard of R.M. Williams. I met him and at the time when he and another group of people were setting up the Australian Stockman's Hall of Fame, and R.M. thought I would be the right sort of slave to work in the engine room for that, and he actually enticed me to do that. And so for 10 years, I worked from the very beginnings of the Australian Stockman's Hall of Fame till eventually we took the Queen through in 1988 when we opened it up as a successful and ongoing thing. And that was about collecting the history of Australia and Australian people in the outback and putting it all in one place, which was successfully done and is still going on. I actually I went to Fort Worth to the American to the Oklahoma Cowboy Hall of Fame as part of my research for our Australian Stockman's Hall of Fame. It was absolutely wonderful. I loved it. And we've replicated some of those ideas in the Australian Stockman's Hall of Fame.
Oh, fantastic! That's great. So and then you became a columnist.
Well, yeah, after I married, because I realized if I didn't marry, I was going to miss out on having children. I had a very strong genetic urge or whatever, or hormonal urge to do that. And so I got in just under the last bell being in to have a family. And then when I'd had the most incredibly busy life beforehand, and suddenly I found myself in charge of these terrifying little creatures called babies and children. And that was a little bit overwhelming, probably the scariest thing I've ever done. And but after a couple of years, I thought that I would, since I was at home anyway, that I would see if I could indulge my love of writing and do what I had always secretly dreamed of doing, which was to write for a newspaper. And I was very lucky enough to be able to use my contacts that I had through the Australian Stockman's Hall of Fame to secure a regular column in the Queensland newspaper, the Courier Mail, which I did every week.
Mm. That's fantastic. So maybe you could then explain a bit about what your book is about and who it would appeal to.
Well, my book is a collection, to a large extent, of the stories that I wrote for the Courier Mail. And for the Courier Mail, I had a brief to write about my family, funny stories about the things that the kids did. And so I always thought that it would make a wonderful collection. And that is what I've put together in my book, Slippin' on the Lino. It's a collection of 44 short stories about what my kids did. And people absolutely love it, because it's what everybody else's kids do as well. It's just all the funny little things they said and all the crazy little, you know, like finding a frog under the sofa when Lou was about three and, you know, toddling out to the door and turning her head just as she got to the door with the frog that she'd just rescued from the dust under the sofa. And just as she turns to tell us what she's doing, the duck who's sitting outside on the back steps grabs the frog, and they have this terrible tussle with the frog. And, you know, it's really sad, because Lou was devastated, but it was really quite funny in hindsight, and it made a very funny story. And that's what the stories are about, that sort of thing.
Mm. And one question that I've talked to other sort of memoir writers about this is, you know, does telling the truth about your family have any, you know, does that change your relationships in any way? You know, have you changed any details, or is anyone angry at you, or, you know, how has that worked?
Well, when the children were very little, it didn't matter, but just in, because they didn't know what was happening. But I'm always conscious of being kind. To be quite honest, I didn't take naked photos of my kids, because I don't find it particularly funny for people to pull out naked kid photos at 21st birthday parties and that sort of stuff. I didn't do anything that I thought might humiliate them later on. Mm. I didn't tell any stories that were not fairly generic sort of stories. And I think as long as you stick to a principle of being kindly, then you're okay. But I have to say, though, that once my kids got old enough, and I would say over 10, once they got old enough to read and to know what was going on, it all became a little bit fraught, so it wasn't nearly so much fun writing anymore. So I didn't write then for the Courier Mail for a number of years, because the kids didn't enjoy that. But now that they're all teenagers, they love them. They love the stories. And I haven't humiliated them in any way. I've very deliberately not humiliated them. There's nothing in there that can cause them grief.
Mm, they're more sort of heartwarming stories, I guess.
Well, yeah, heartwarming. I mean, embarrassing stuff as well, but embarrassing stuff that everybody does.
Yeah. And did you keep notes as they were growing up, you know, as things happened? I mean, well, or was that just as the writing?
Joe, I wrote the stories as they were growing up. Every week I had to produce a story under our real names, because that was part of the deal. And I tried to struggle out of that one at first. I wasn't at all comfortable with that at first, but the editor of the Courier Mail insisted that we do that. And that actually was quite good, because it kept me honest, and it also kept me being kinder than I might have otherwise been if I'd been writing under a pseudonym. But because I had to produce a story every week, I kind of didn't have to make notes. I might have just made notes that week, and then by the end of the week, I put together my story, but I've got them all there as they happened.
No, that's great. And so what, I mean, you had all these columns and everything, but why did you decide to write your book now? Because I believe there's a bit of a story around that.
Yeah. I've always wanted to, number one. And like many people and like many things, there are lots of things that we've always wanted to do and never quite got around to it. But last year, a group of us women, and we've all reached a particular age and stage, which is like our kids are moving out, and we're suddenly thinking, oh, right, okay, we're prepared for, we've all our lives been prepared for the life of raising our kids, and nobody kind of said that there was going to be this great big long life after they'd gone. And one of our husbands had died, and we were sitting around at the wake, kind of thinking about things as you do at a time like that, And somebody suggested that as a way to, they started talking about, okay, well, what are you doing? What are you doing? Your kids have left home, et cetera, et cetera. And one woman, Susan, said, well, I've always had this secret dream, actually, of being an artist. And I've decided, she had read the book The Secret by Rhoda Byrne and had decided that she would she'd set herself a five-year plan. She was going to be a famous artist within 5 years, or she was going to change tack and do something else. And the woman she was speaking to said, well, actually, I've always wanted to be a photographer. And it just kind of grew all around. And next thing, there were nine women who all decided, rightio, we'll get together and we'll encourage each other to achieve our goals. And in order to do that, we'll form a group, but also we'll set a date when we're going to have an art show. And so, right, 1 year's time, August 2009 was when we set the date for this art show, and we formed a group. We got ourselves together under a little business name, and we went ahead and we did it. And I've always talked about putting together this book, and they said, righto, Jane, are you going to do it? Just do it. Don't talk about it anymore. You do it. And it was incredibly challenging. But I did it, and I'm going to do it again. I'm going to do another one for next year's art show.
Oh, wonderful. So August, everyone achieved their goals, basically.
Well, they did. Everybody achieved their goal, which was the first step, I guess, in achieving their goal, yes. We had an art show. In August, we have this enormous agricultural show at Brisbane, which is the capital of Queensland, and everybody comes down for the show. And we thought, all right, well, we'll open up our doors for that week of the show. And we thought, on the Saturday night, we'll have a party to celebrate the fact of our show. Well, so many people. We sort of couldn't get our act together about coordinating the invitation list for the party. And in the end, we thought, oh, stuff it. We'll just ask everyone that we know. And we did. And so each of the nine of us, we've all been around for a fairly long time. And you can imagine we know quite a few people. Well, honestly, so many people came to that art show. A lot of people just ended up driving past and not coming in. A lot of people never got inside the door but had their entire party out on the footpath. A lot of people who were inside didn't get outside for about 2 hours. The governor of Queensland came. Everyone came. It was the best party. And it was the best celebration. I think it was the fact of people were just so moved by the fact that a group of women who had been friends forever, whose parents had been friends, the whole thing, the way we do here in Australia, but the way you do everywhere, I guess, the fact that we'd got together and decided that we would help each other to achieve our goals. It was such a moving story without the violins and without being sort of, you know, pathetic.
Yeah.
People were very touched by it.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, it's getting to that time of year when people will be setting goals, for the new year and everything. Do you have any tips for goal setting? Because you obviously are achieving those goals. So, you know, you're a master at it.
Oh, I don't know about a master at it. But, you know, one thing I think that the greatest resource that we all have, apart from the resources inside ourselves, is our friends. And I think that whatever you give out, so you receive back. And if you're always ready to lend other people a hand to achieve theirs, I think the universe always makes sure that you achieve yours as well. Mm. And I mean, I think as women often give and give and give and give for years. And I do believe it will come back to you in the end. And I think it came back to us. I have no doubt that it was the group that actually motivated me to achieve what has been a lifelong goal for me. And so that would be, just be friends and support other people. Mm. And accept friendship and support from other people as well.
Yeah. And, I mean, you said that it had been a lifelong goal and it took you, quite a while, I guess, to get there. Were you then surprised by, I know you said it was hard work, but was it also an achievable goal? I mean, can you tell other people who are listening who haven't written that book yet, how was that experience?
It was an achievable goal, but it was hard work. There's no doubt about that. When you read what, you know, full-time writers do, they set themselves very definite writing hours. And certainly I did. I mean, I worked very hard over that period of putting the book together. I found I had to rewrite every story and then work it up with an editor, finding all the elements to do with putting together the book, finding the editor, finding the person who was going to set out the book and illustrate the book, finding the person who was going to print the book, then finding the agent who was going to distribute the book. All of those took work, and they took a lot of research. But it also reinforces my idea of the fact of a group. I mean, you put it out there. In Queensland, we have this fantastic resource called the Queensland Writers Centre. They do courses, but they also give advice and point people in the right direction. And they were absolutely fantastic for me. And I'm sure that there would be similar resources anywhere that you would care to go, who just bend over backwards to help people to get their stories done. But nothing. I mean, you've got to work. There's no doubt about it. You have to put the work in yourself.
Mm. And I guess a couple of interesting things there. You know, obviously you've self-published, but you engaged editors, distributors, you know, the Queensland Writers' Centre. This is not something that you sit alone in a room for a year and do on your own, is it? This is you have to involve other people, other professionals.
Basically. Yes, you do. And I think also in order to measure your success in achieving your goal, you have to call upon people in terms of resources that you have known over the years who will support you in it. What I mean when I say that is that I had my book, I got endorsements written on my book, and I actually approached people with my heart in my mouth to some extent to say, would you be so kind as to have a look at this manuscript and then write something on the back to the effect that you think that it's worth reading. And that was worthwhile, and it encouraged me because I got some fantastic people to say that they would and to actually go ahead and do it. And that encouraged me enormously because they showed faith in me. In every, you know, every part of this journey has been so moving because people have been so supportive. It's been absolutely extraordinary. I wouldn't have not done it for anything in the world. All, you know, the money aside, I wouldn't have not done it because I've just found out really how people are just so willing to help you and how people have been so excited for me and so wanting to make it work for me. It's just been lovely.
Mm. Yeah, and I find that the writers and readers and, you know, everyone in the book and sort of publishing industry, generally very nice people, you know. Yeah, obviously. Yeah. Mm. Okay, so a couple more questions. So one, you know, you actually write humour, and I find this quite difficult. You know, I'm quite a serious person, and, you know, I write in quite a serious manner. I do a lot of business writing. And so I wondered if you could maybe share with people your top tips for writing humour.
Right, okay. Well, a bit like having a writing skill, I think that a lot of people are challenged by writing, full stop. And I think humour to some extent comes to you naturally, but and so that's the very first step. But then again, it also is something you develop. So if you're able to relax and just let it come into your head and then let it all hang out and just work on it, I think you can make it work. But to get back to what I said at the very beginning, at the very root of the survival of people in the harsh environment of the Australian outback is humour. You know, we are a people who have, you know, who've had to laugh things off and have had to really genuinely and seriously look at the funny side of things in order to survive or whatever. And that's not much of a tip, is it? But it's very much of a cultural thing, you know, humour. But I have written, you asked me to think about what my top three tips might be, and I would say relax, number one, let it all hang out once it starts to come, number two, number three, just in brackets, be kind, number four, not everyone can do it, actually, but have a go, because it's so worthwhile, such a nice thing to do.
Make people laugh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been always, I mean, I'm one of five kids, and I must admit, I've always been the one who kind of stands in the middle and everybody looks to make them laugh. I haven't got an overt humour. I couldn't really stand up on a stage and make everyone laugh. I've just got a wry humour, and that's very Australian to have a wry humour.
Mm. No,
my son Jock has the same sort of humour. When he was only about 7, I remember we went to visit his cousin, and his cousin had a dog called Dig. He had a sheepdog called Dig. And Jock looked at the dog and he said, so when he dies, are you going to call him Dud? And it was very clever. I thought that was a very clever comment, and it's just in there somewhere.
Mm. Oh, no, that's fantastic. Okay, so I'm also interested because you've got your book into the Pillow Talk shops, which are a chain of shops in Australia specialising in bedroom and bathroom goods. You know, they're not bookshops. So how did you make that opportunity happen? And is it better than selling in a bookshop?
Well, I wouldn't say it was better than selling in a bookshop. But all jokes aside, I know what I do in bed. I sit up and read. And when I wake up in the night, which from time to time I do at 3 o'clock in the morning or something, and I've got two choices. I can either lie there with my blood sugar at its lowest and worry myself sick, or I can grab a book by my bedside and read myself happy. And if it's a happy book as well, then that's a real bonus. And so to me, no bedroom is complete without at least one book on my bedside. And so I can't think of a more appropriate place, to be quite honest, than Pillow Talk to have it, because it's an absolutely essential accessory to a bedside table, a book for me, and especially a book of short stories, because that's what these are. I mean, if you wake up at 3 o'clock and you just need something to make you feel better and then go back to sleep without waking yourself up completely, then a 3 or 4 minute story is absolutely perfect. But it did actually help that I knew the owner of Pillow Talk, and he agreed with the concept that, you know, that it's a fantastic bedside accessory, and he very kindly, that was one of the areas of support that I was really quite blown out to receive. Actually, he very kindly offered to try selling it through Pillow Talk. It hasn't exactly walked out the door, because people don't go in there expecting to buy a book. But it's been good. It's been great.
Fantastic. Okay, well, we're almost out of time. So where can people find more about you and about your book?
On my website would be the best thing to do, which is just www.janegreave.com.au.
Fantastic. Well, thanks ever so much for your time, Jane. That was great.
My pleasure, Jo.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time.